I wanted to start off with a quick survey and a show of hands. How many of you like the superhero movies? Like, you know, we have Marvel, we have DC, we have Superman, we have Batman, we have Spider-Man, we have Aquaman, and Wonder Woman. Some hands? Just a few? Okay. I really like them. I really enjoy them. They're kind of formulaic, though, right? They have this sort of pattern, this formula that they all kind of abide by. And one of the ones that I think is going to be important for what we're talking about today is it seems like towards the end of every movie, every superhero movie, there's like this progression to where it looks like the evil villain is going to win. And it's not until the absolute last moment that the superhero is able to overcome, right? The superhero shows up, he's able to make things happen, or she's able to make things happen, and the villain is conquered and taken care of. Well, as I was reflecting on this, I was thinking through, like, is there someone in our lives, maybe a person, like a parent or a close friend, a grandparent, a high school bud, whom you kind of keep in contact with, where they have this uncanny ability to always show up, to always be there in the important times of life. And maybe they don't live nearby, but when big things happen, you just have absolutely no doubt that they're going to be there ready to help, maybe to offer some extra hands to lighten the load, maybe offer a shoulder to cry on. You know, they're the first people that we call when a personal tragedy strikes. They're the ones that are there at your parents' funeral. They're the ones celebrating with you at your wedding and rejoicing with you at the birth of kids and celebrating when the kids are finally on their own. But they aren't just friends, right? We have friendships that develop because of common interests and things that we do together. But once we're no longer doing those things, those friendships kind of fade away. These are beyond friends. They're people who continue to walk through life with us when our paths have diverged. And so I want to call them this morning our heroes, because we count on them, we rely on them, and there may be ones, friends who we've shared like a foxhole experience and pain and some struggle together, but they're the ones who also come to rescue when our pain is only our own. They're closer than family, they're more than friends, they're heroes. And so as I was reflecting on this, I was thinking, like, God is the ultimate hero of humanity, right? When Adam and Eve fail, God shows up. When there's going to be a big flood that's going to destroy humanity, God shows up for humanity. When humans decide, hey, we're going to try to build a tower up to God, God showed up for that one too. Then God decided, I'm going to show up in one man's life and develop a relationship with him, and that was Abraham. And so God blessed him and showed him that he would always be there for him. And as that family grew, God then showed up for that nation. And when that nation was enslaved, he showed up to free them. He showed up to give them a land and establish them as a nation. And he showed up again and again to protect that nation. And then he showed up to discipline that nation. Well, there came a time in which the barriers could be removed and all people could experience who God is. And then God showed up there too, as a human, as one of us. So this morning, we're going to delve into the significance of God taking on flesh and dwelling among us. And we're going to see that God knows when to show up. And I think timing can be everything, right? Since God knows when to show up, I think there's three things that we're going to learn this morning. We can expect his presence, we should accept his uniqueness, and we need to surrender to him. So those are the ideas we're going to look at today. Since God knows when to show up, we can expect his presence, we should accept his uniqueness, and we need to surrender to him. So first, I want to go through this whole concept of God being with us. And this is something we focus on every year, this time of year, during this Christmas season. God sent Jesus to be a human to provide a way for us to relate to God. So Jesus is our mediator, right? Jesus represents God to us, but he also represents us to God. And so Christmas is this crazy, significant event because Jesus comes as the God-man. Jesus is God, but he is man. He is fully divine. He is fully human. Now, there was a follower of Jesus when Jesus was walking the earth during his earthly ministry, and he had a follower named John. And John wrote an account of Jesus' life. And in the beginning of that account, as he's kind of setting up what he wants to talk about, John mentions this concept of the Word. And he says, this Word is God. It was at the beginning, creating all things. Okay? So this Word is divine. But then he says in chapter 1, verse 14a, and this is up on the screen for you, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. And so John is very clear here. He is referring to Jesus. And so he's saying, look, Jesus is both God, he's divine, and he's also man, human. And the Apostle Paul, he agrees with this. He talks about this throughout his writings, and he specifically shares this with his letter to those in the city of Colossae. And in the first chapter, he talks about that he, meaning Jesus, is the image of the invisible God. And in verse 19, he says it a little bit differently. He says, for God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, or Jesus. And so Jesus is this human that perfectly displays God. Now, the astute observer is going to be like, I'm not so sure about this. How does a human contain the divine? How can what's finite, right, contain the limitless? Because that's what we're talking about. Our bodies, we take up a certain amount of space. Like, we can't contain all of who God is, who is all present. So how does this work? How does God become flesh and walk among us? There are lots of different issues that we can wrestle with, and I really encourage you to wrestle through this because there's a lot here. But as we're just thinking about this supreme, almighty creator being grabbing the robe of humanity and covering himself with it to walk around with us, I want to give you a quick answer to try to remedy some issues in our minds with this. So Jesus is fully God, but he chooses to only exercise his exclusively divine characteristics, so that would be all-powerful, all-knowing, all-present, when he is led by his Father to do so. And I have a little illustration for this. It's like a guy who is very gifted and talented with the ladies. He's a great flirter. He knows how to interact with them and creates relationships with women very easily and that kind of thing. And so in high school, he has lots of lady friends. In college, he has like just a trail of ladies that follow him around. Well, when he gets married, it's not like that gifting is suddenly gone, but now he has an authority that tells him when he can use that characteristic, that skill set, right? And so it's kind of the same way with Jesus. Now, Jesus is also fully human. He has this need for food, for sleep. He faces real temptations and faces limitation. But Jesus submits to God, and he chooses to rely on God's empowerment just as we must. We have to be empowered by the Holy Spirit, right? If we're going to live out the design that God gave us as image bearers of him. And so Jesus is actually perfectly reflecting God's moral attributes. So that's like love, joy, peace, patience, justice, just to name a few of those. And so Jesus then is our ultimate example of humanity, whom God created in his image. Jesus shows us how to image God as humans. But he also reveals God to us as humans. So for me, it's much easier to grasp the divinity of Jesus than the humanity. And I don't know about you guys, but I think because of the focus on his miracles and his healings and this amazing thing that he did where he rose from the dead, I think it's like Jesus has this ability, this power that's totally beyond me or my human experience. But I think for those who met Jesus in the flesh, those who saw him maybe in the manger, those who saw him playing on the hills of Nazareth with other friends, or those who walked and heard some of his teaching in the hills of Galilee, they probably, their initial reaction in just seeing Jesus would have been, well, he just looks like a dude. He just looks like a normal guy, like me, like any other person. The reality is Jesus is both God and man. Right? So as he lays in the manger, he's still God. But after he resurrects, he's still man. Reconciling these things and looking at some of the details can be really challenging. And I want to bring up a few just to kind of work through this a little bit with you. One of the questions that I've wrestled with and it has entered my mind is, why did God choose to come into the world in human form and place himself in just a poor, blue-collar family? Why did Jesus take on a normal life of hardships and not privilege? As divine, he possesses the height of privilege and every right to be treated with exaltation and to be pampered and that kind of thing. But Jesus doesn't seem interested in utilizing his privilege or his full divinity. Another one is how Jesus related to his earthly father, Joseph. Now, when we look at the scriptures, and there's little account of Joseph after Jesus hits the age of 12. There's little in the scriptures about Jesus from age 12 to about 30. So somewhere within that time frame, something happens to Joseph, and we assume that he passed away. And with that assumption, we assume then that Jesus had to take on the role of caring for his family. And so that meant working and working long hours because he had a number of brothers and sisters that needed to be taken care of. And so what enters my mind is, wait a second, Jesus, you have the power over death. You have the power to resurrect. Why wouldn't you use this for your earthly father, Joseph? Because it would seem to me to be a much more efficient and easier path if you choose to resurrect Joseph and allow him to continue on that support of the family and care for the family so that you could focus on other things. But Jesus doesn't seem to do that. Jesus doesn't also seem to know all things. There's some things in the future that Jesus knows about and other things that he doesn't. And so the only way that I can reconcile these things is I think Jesus is living an authentically human experience. His power and his authority comes through his submission to God just like us. And that means his hunger is real. His pains and aches are real. His tiredness is real. Those temptations that he faced were real. And so Jesus can very much understand our difficulties because he is fully and truly human. And he relates to God from that human perspective as well. So I wanted to take one more example and kind of place ourselves in Jesus' shoes, because Jesus, he knows the Father. So think about this. You're like in Jesus' like shoes now. You know the Father. He's the creator of all things. You're on mission for him to show humanity the wonder of God. And you're going to die for them. You're going to remove the barriers of sin that have held people away from God just way too long. You were there with God in the very beginning, and so you saw him fleeing the universe into existence out of nothing. You know that your God, your Father, has all resources. There is nothing that can hold him back. And so you ask him, you make one plea of your own desire to your Father, and you know he can do anything that's logically consistent. And you ask, God, let this cup, this trial, the cross that I'm about to face pass from me. It's torture, it's punishment. Is there any other way? I want to do that way. You see, it's interesting. Jesus makes this request. He doesn't know the options available to God here. But what's the Father's response? It's silence. Now, Jesus knows enough about the future to know that the cross is going to be a horrific experience, that his body, his humanity is not going to enjoy this. It's going to be painful. The torture, the suffering, the pain. But his Father doesn't give him another option. This is the only option. And so Jesus has to trust the Father's desire is the best. And that's a tough lesson, I think, for us, that even though that the best might lead to a horrible place, like the best led to the cross for Jesus, God used it in unimaginable ways that he freed people from their sin. There are times when God doesn't show up because he knows when to show up. Sometimes it's best for God not to engage. And that can be really, really difficult. So I hope that you're like wrestling with this idea that Jesus is both God and man. And I hope it kind of makes some sense to you. I think a bigger question that we need to ask this morning is, it's a question about timing. Why then? Why did God send Jesus back in the first century? Why not send him long before that? Or maybe a couple generations afterward. Maybe that would be a good time as well. Why does Jesus, as this perfect communication, projection of who God is, need to come in the first century? Well, Paul kind of touches on this in his letter to Rome and Roman followers in chapter 5, verse 6. And at this verse, he says, "At just the right time, when we were still helpless, Christ died for the ungodly." Now, so for Paul, it's not so much about the timing in history as much as the timing of the condition. Like God, or Jesus' arrival is not a reward for humanity's good behavior. It's not like we've now matured. We've gotten to a point in which we can have this understanding of God and what he's up to and how he can take care of us. The mission and the message of Jesus was not all of a sudden more attainable to us. It actually seems that maybe the opposite would be the case, that at this point, if there wasn't some kind of godly intervention in this world, it would tear itself apart. And that's Paul's point. God showed up. There was nothing else that could be done. There was no one else who could enter the stage at this moment who had the gifts, the talents, the abilities, the power to take over. It had to be God. And so God's love for us moved him to act for us because we couldn't do it for ourselves. It's like all the superhero movies, right? It comes down to the absolute last moment when the hero shows up and defeats the villain. That's because God is humanity's hero. Oftentimes, it's the last desperate hour for me personally when I have nothing else to go to, when I finally relinquish control over to God and say, "God, I'm yours. I can't do this anymore. Help me." I've never really shared this story with anyone before, but I thought it fit really, really well. There was a time when I was young in my faith. I was been a follower of Jesus for about 4 years. I was able to drive and that kind of thing, but I was lonely. And as I read my Bible and pursued God, I noticed there weren't a lot of friends of mine that wanted to talk about God or follow God with me. I still had lots of friends, but no one that really wanted to pursue God with me. And it's not like I needed a lot of attention or affirmation, or I just wanted to do the right things to please Jesus. And my friends, they actually respected me for that and left me out of some of their more mischievous things that I'm sure if I had the opportunity to partake in, I would have enjoyed that. But I knew I was on the outside because of my faith, and that hurt. It hurt really bad. Well, one day, a new family came to church, and I greeted them and their very attractive daughters. And I learned that one of those daughters was my age and loved to sing worship songs. And this family got super engaged over the next couple weeks, and so I was excited to get to know this girl a little bit better, and we had a youth event coming up. And I was super excited about that. And so this youth event, though, wasn't at the church. It was at another youth's home. And so when the time arrived, I tried to drive to the event, but I couldn't find the house. Now, that's kind of unusual for me because I'm fairly good with maps. I have a spatial mind, and I can kind of see where things should be arranged and that kind of stuff. And so I couldn't understand, why can't I find this house? And I was super bummed and very, very, very frustrated at God. And so I started to yell at him. I figured God is big enough. It seems like the psalmist yelled at God every once in a while, and it works out well for them. So I start yelling at God and having kind of a pity party, and I tell God, look, I'm trying to follow you. I've lost some friends, and I have no one that I can really talk to. No one knows how hard it's been to be so alone, and I can't do this anymore. And all I wanted to do was just hang out with this new girl, get to know her a little bit, and you won't let me do that. And so as I started to think through my frustrations with God and how upset I was, my thoughts start to turn to a very dark place, and I considered killing myself. I felt no one would care. It wouldn't really affect anyone because I felt so alone, and right then, my cell phone rung. Now, it was one of these brick phones, and my parents wanted me to have it while I was driving because if the car broke down or something like that, I can give them a call and that kind of thing. Well, this phone was a godsend. I answered it. It was my youth pastor, and he said, Nate, where are you? And so I'm trying to gather my composure and hoping that he can't tell how distraught I am in my voice, and I say, well, I couldn't find the house. Well, really? The new girl is here, and she was wondering if you were coming, and I told her, I thought you would be here, but you're not here yet. And I told him, well, I don't think I can make it now. I wish I could be there. To this day, I wonder, what would have happened if God hadn't intervened? If God hadn't prompted my youth pastor to call me in that moment, to take time away from that event, to reach out to me and give me a call and see what was going on? If God in that moment had turned away from me in my kind of self-centered pity party of despair. But God was my hero and he showed up for me. Now, it's not like this was a singular event. There have been many times where I've cried out to God and he has answered. Now, he doesn't answer all the time. Let me be clear about that. But there have been times where he's saved me from temptation. There have been times where he's comforted me in distress. There's one time I was driving down the highway and just overcome by something that had happened. And so I'm just weeping and I can't really see where I'm going. And I'm driving down to Virginia and interstate highway at 65 miles per hour and just praying that God will keep me on the road. And he came. He showed up. He comforted me. Now, it's not like he appeared in the passenger seat and unbuckled his seatbelt, which would be very dangerous, and gave me a hug. But he told me that he loved me. He reminded me of that love. We see that God knows when to show up in other events recorded in Scripture. Think of this one. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They were these teens, young adults, who lost their home. The army came in from this foreign land and conquered their nation and destroyed their home, and then they are dragged back to that nation's capital city, and they're forced to serve the king, King Nebuchadnezzar. And so at that time, they decide, well, we're still going to remain true to our faith. We're still going to worship our God alone. Well, the king had this great scheme where he was going to build this statue. And this statue was really tall and made of gold and that kind of stuff. And so he commanded all of his people to worship the statue. Well, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were like, no thanks. We're not doing that. The king got word of it. And so they are brought before the king who had destroyed their home, the king that rules all the known world at the time. And I love Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego because they're super sassy. They're like, king, we have no reason to give you an answer on this matter. Like, whoa. And they continue. They say, look, if our God, one, can rescue us from your hands, but if he chooses not to, we're still not going to worship your statue. We're still not going to obey you in this matter because we trust in God. Of course, that makes the king really, really angry. And so he takes the trio and throws them into a fiery furnace. And that's when God shows up. Think about that, because God could have intervened by taking out that statue so that no one could worship it, right? He could have intervened for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego when they're having this like whole investigation with the king and that kind of thing. But God doesn't show up until the last moment inside the furnace. As a result of that, King Nebuchadnezzar took note and he gave worship to the one true king. Now, Jesus does this as well. Jesus' friend, Lazarus, was deathly ill. And what does Jesus do? He takes his time. He doesn't really do anything about it. Kind of waits a couple days, and then he moseys up to where Lazarus lives. Well, Lazarus is dead at that point. People are mourning. They're having like this funeral stuff, and everyone is really upset. And then Jesus shows up and resurrects Lazarus. You see, it seemed like it was too late, but God showed up and did more than anyone could think or imagine. So what about you? I hope that you have a few stories of God showing up for you. And the reality is that all of us are waiting for God to show up. God is not done showing up in our lives personally and in our world, which is great news. But it's not that he's going to show up whenever. He's going to show up at just the right time. When Jesus entered the scene over 2,000 years ago, it was the perfect time for God's message to spread. There was no other time in known history at that point of the world that the world was as connected through roads because of the Roman Empire and its reach. And so people could travel fairly easily. It was a time of relative peace because Rome had so dominated the known world. And so people could travel and get messages to others easily. There was no time in the history of the world where a single language could reach as far as Greek, as the dominant trade language of that time. There was no point in history in which the Jews, who were familiar with God and what he had done for them, were spread across the known world. And so when they heard the gospel and some of them embraced it, they could then share that with their friends and neighbors. Ultimately, we don't know God's reasons or his timing, but we know he can see far better than we can. But he has a much larger perspective on what's going on in the world and what needs to happen. So, how do we respond to this truth that God knows when to show up? I think we need to have a change of mindset, because I think our perspective tends to be self-focused. And one of the things that I've learned in doing all these kind of Zoom meetings and stuff because of the pandemic and all that is it's really distracting to try to have a conversation when you're looking at yourself, right? Because Zoom has that box that is you, and it has the box of the person you're trying to communicate with. And more often, I see myself looking at myself instead of looking at the people I'm supposed to be talking to. And it's really, really distracting. Now, in Zoom, you can like switch it up and stuff, so you can take care of that. Just a little tip there. But so often, we tend to focus on ourselves, right? And God, I think he gave us eyes, not so we could see ourselves, but so we could see those around us. And so when we're wrestling with some type of issue or problem and that kind of thing, instead of looking at ourselves and our resources and our abilities, our gifts and talents and that kind of thing, we need to be remembering to look to God. Now, I'm not saying that we base our plans or our life in forcing God to make this appearance at just the right time for us. God is not going to be a superhero slave for us. He is not our servant or our butler. But I think we often don't have this expectation that God can and might show up for us. We think it's all on us. It's all up to us. And so our first point is we should expect God's presence. We should expect God's presence. Our expectation should be that God can and might intervene at any moment, that our hero, God, can come. Now, we need to talk to him, right? We need to let him know how we're doing and what our situation is like. And he'll probably come and comfort us in that moment, or he may even show up if we actually need that. And I think as we're cultivating this relationship with God, where God is our hero, it's going to build an expectation for us. We're going to know that God does take care of us. He will show up when he needs to. Now, it also doesn't mean that God is going to bend all of his plans in order to comfort us and provide for us just an easy life and that kind of thing. God generally isn't concerned about our lack of comfort. In fact, I think he uses our lack of comfort to prove and show that he cares for us in the midst of trials. And so when those hard times happen, our posture should be that we remember if God chooses to intervene, it's going to completely change our circumstances. And so we are eager to seek him out. We are eager to remember and ask our hero to show up. That's what Jesus did. Now, we don't need to be ashamed to ask God to engage in our life. I understand, like, it's not like in the grand scheme of history of the world that our troubles amount to much, given all of eternity, but God is interested, and he does care, and he wants to know our needs. He wants us to verbalize those and share those, and so we should go to him with those. Sometimes God's intervention can be a simple change of perspective. So go to God boldly and let him decide how to work. And I think if we have this mindset that God can and will show up in our lives from time to time when we absolutely need it, I think it makes us hopeful. I think it gives us this optimism. And I think that type of optimism that it doesn't matter how bad things get, our God can still intervene, he can still show up, he can change everything for us. I think that type of optimism is attractive and addictive. That people want to get to know people who are that excited and that optimistic on things can be better and can be good because their God can intervene when he needs to. I think it will shine a light of hope to those around us. And so look to our hero in expectation of showing up and making a difference. Now, the second application, I think, is that we need to accept God's uniqueness. God knows when to show up, but when he does show up, we better be okay with what he does. And many times Jesus showed his connection to the Father through miracle after miracle after miracle. But there are still some people who didn't accept who Jesus was. Some people didn't like the fact that Jesus wasn't this conquering warrior. Some people didn't like the fact that Jesus didn't preach some type of opposition against Rome and its occupation. Some people didn't like that Jesus wouldn't be their king and rule over them the way they wanted in their time. The same is true today. Some people reject God because he doesn't intervene in every innocent person's suffering. Some people reject God because he doesn't make them comfortable. Some people reject God because he doesn't appear to them or speak to them in an audible voice. If God enters the scene, we'd best be ready to follow. God doesn't have to do things our way. For our comfort, for our benefit, he has a bigger perspective. He's looking at his plan from the beginning of time to the very end. And so our small issue might not be handled the way that we want. God might simply say to us, no, you have all that you need. You will be okay. Just remain connected to me. Sometimes God shows up in ways that we have a hard time accepting. God might use something that we don't like. God might use someone that we don't think has any place to help. When we look through scriptures, we see God used a teen boy to rescue a nation. We see that God used a donkey to confront a prophet. God used a whale to turn back a wayward messenger. God used frogs and flies and disease to display his power. God likes to do things in very unusual, unexpected ways. So when he shows up, be ready. Don't put God in a box. There's a chance that when we do that, we're going to look foolish and short-sighted. And when God does the absolute miraculous, be ready for his intervention. Be ready to accept God's uniqueness. I think part of prepping for God showing up is the surrender to God. When God shows up, he's in charge and not us. And Jesus is this great example to that. And Jesus asked God to intervene, but God was silent. And yet Jesus obeyed. And Jesus handed over his life to God, his thoughts, his will, his desires. And we have to do the same. We have to have this mindset that our plans are secondary. Our thoughts are beneath God's thoughts. Our ways are inferior to God's ways. We should never insist God do something the way we want. And that can be really, really difficult. When our child is sick and we need God to intervene. When we've lost a job and the bills keep stacking on top of one another. When life just feels like it's been torn from us. It takes a lot of humility. But it's when we choose to place ourselves under God, under his care and protection, that God moves. There's a really, really important verse for this. And it's something that we need to keep in our minds and reflect on over and over again. God resists the proud, but he gives grace. He lifts up the humble. As I think about this and how it's been true in my own life, it's been true both ways. I often, in my pride, wait until I'm out of options before I turn to God. I want to use every resource that I have and the gifts that I've been given to try to remedy a situation, and I fail to go to the source of all the resources and gifts of God himself. Don't wait. Be humble and go to God first. And maybe today things are great, and that's wonderful. But when life takes that dive, remember that God is present with you and he has the resources to intervene and deliver you and can see you through. So coming as a baby 2,000 years ago in a small town in a remote province of the Roman Empire doesn't seem like the greatest influential entry into society. And yet today Jesus is the most well-known individual throughout the history of our world. It's hard to argue with the result that God knows when to show up. Jesus has promised that he will show up again. So are we ready? Is God your hero? And maybe there's someone here this morning where you don't really engage with God that often, and so Christmas is one of the few times where you think about God and his great love for you, and don't let your pride keep you from engaging with God. Only the divine can fill the human heart, and we need to humble ourselves, acknowledge our pride and our failings, and ask God to forgive us, to intervene in our lives. And you can do this because God has told us exactly how to do it. We just talk to him, we ask him for his forgiveness. And through the sacrifice of Jesus and his death and resurrection, we will be saved. Don't continue to live your life in your own strength. It's exhausting. Look to your hero who always shows up at the right time. And maybe God will decide that he's not going to intervene for us. And the world and all of its schemes are going to have to play out. And there's going to be chaos. And there's going to be destruction. Can we submit to God's call to follow him through the trial? And if we depend upon him and his empowerment, we will endure. But we need each other. I need you. You need me. We need together to follow after God and look to him and remind each other that God is our hero. And I think when we do that, there's going to be a light of hope that continues to shine out into the darkness through God's people. Let's pray. Father, I thank you so much that you sent Jesus so long ago. Lord, that we can look to him, that he has this amazing, unique relationship with you of just fully submitting to you. And Lord, I pray that I need that. And I need to follow in Jesus' footsteps there, and I need to squash down my pride. Lord, I thank you so much that Jesus went beyond just being a good example, but he delivered us and provided a way for us to connect with you in a real and meaningful way in which your Spirit can empower us and live with us and dwell in us. And so, Lord, I pray that your Spirit, as he dwells in us, would not leave us where we're at, but transform our hearts and minds. Lord, we need a perspective change. Too often we look at ourselves and not on you. Help our eyes to be focused on you, and help that to change our perspective, to give us an optimism that believes that you will intervene, that you will do what you need to do. You will show up at the right time. And so, Lord, I thank you, I praise you that we know we worship a God who's a superhero. So, Lord, I place my trust in you. And I pray that we would all do that together as we endure any trial that you might place in front of us. Thank you so much for Jesus. Thank you so much for his light. Thank you that we can follow after him. In Christ's name I pray. Amen.